He says officers barricaded the door, what he considered the last line of defense.
I had been yelling and screaming as loud as I was, please stop, get back, stop. We had our weapons drawn.
There's a gun! There's a gun!
Byrd, only his hand and gun visible, targeted a figure trying to climb through a window. He fired a single, fatal shot, hitting Ashley Babbitt. She was 35 years old, an Air Force veteran, Trump supporter, and QAnon follower.
We see your arm out there for a considerable amount of time. Were you wavering?
I was taking a tactical stance. You're ultimately hoping that your commands will be complied with, and unfortunately, they were not.
Well, that's the voice of Lieutenant Michael Byrd. He was the shooter who shot and killed Ashley Babbitt on January the 6th. In the Capitol. And so yesterday we had part one with Joseph Hanneman, an investigative reporter for The Blaze. He was with the Epoch Times when I first met Joseph, and he has written over 500 articles about January the 6th. He is a walking encyclopedia. So yesterday we got a lot of information. Some of it I thought I knew. I do know a lot, but I learned things I had not heard. So if you didn't listen to part one, I suggest that you do that because we need to know the truth about this. And we still don't know the total truth about it, but we know a lot. So I hope you'll listen to part one. But today we're going to explore Lieutenant Michael Byrd. He thinks he's a hero. He said he was a hero. He's received all kinds of awards for what he did to Ashley. But was that a justified shooting? Was it a lawful shooting? Well, evidently the Justice Department doesn't think so because they're in preliminary settlement of a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against them for this wrongful death. It's a fascinating story. We're going to dissect who Michael Byrd was, and we'll do that right after this.
I wake up in ICU on a breathing tube. I was on blood transfusion, and I wasn't able to talk till like the next day. They told me it was very bad. The abortion pill gave me an infection behind my uterus, so I had to have a partial hysterectomy. I have a nurse come in every day to change the wound vac that I had attached to my stomach. I was falling into like this deep hole of depression, kind of not wanting to do nothing, didn't really want to figure my life out. People that's administrating these type of abortion, they don't want the negative things to be out in the open for people to see because that's their way of people coming in and them getting money for their practice or for their business. I still think about the child till this day, what life probably could have been if I did keep it.
Sad, so sad, and really less graphic than other stories that I could play for you, and I will. The abortion pill, by the way, according to a new study, is 22 times more dangerous than the FDA ever claimed. Girls can get it. Women can get it without a prescription, without seeing a doctor. They just go online and order it. And the tragedy for those women is just beyond words. And so I'm on a crusade to stop this thing. We have to stop this abortion pill. Stop it. It needs to be off the market. We should not be doing this to our women and children. It reminds me very much of the COVID vaccine. It reminds me of the twist of our medical establishment, our trusted organizations who tell us that something's safe when it is not safe. The French abortion pill RU486 is not safe. Well, Preborn is doing their best. Their whole business has been turned upside down because they're having young women come in carrying babies in a towel, aborted babies, not knowing what to do. Women traumatized, who they do have a pill that they can give to reverse these tragic choices the girls are making, but only if they've only taken the first pill and depending at what stage. So it's a tragedy, no matter how you strike it or no matter how you tell it, it's a tragedy. If you'd like to help Preborn in a practical way stop this, just go to preborn.com/Sandy. The other thing, of course, is to call your congressman, call your senators, call your representatives, and tell them they need to step in. They say they're pro-life. Well, put their money where their mouth is. But you can go to preborn.com/Sandy, make your most generous donation, and meanwhile, the work of Preborn goes into trying to persuade the women not to try to take the life of their baby in the first place. But when they find themselves in this situation, They do what they do in the case of these ultrasounds. They tell them about Jesus because some of them are just shattered. The work is worthy, and I suggest and ask that you go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your best donation. Well, this is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. You can call us at 662-821-2040, 662-821-2040, and that's to leave a message, which we love playing on the air when we can. So, and I love to listen to them, too. Love to hear what you're thinking. You can also write us at sandy@afr.net. Same for that. We love to read them. We love to share them on the air when we can. The podcast is available on any podcast platform. AFR.net really is our home base. American Family Radio, that's home. If you'd like to listen, though, at sandyrios.com, if you're not real podcast savvy, it's easy, by the way, to do a podcast. But if you're a little uncomfortable, go to sandyrios.com and you can listen quite easily. Well, today is our part two discussion with Joseph Hahnemann. And it's just fascinating stuff. And I hope that you'll listen to it, let it soak in, share it with your friends and family, so that the American people can finally, at last, know at least partially the truth about January 6th on today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice. Not social justice, but God's justice. What's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up. Speak up. Say something. Do something.
Your name has been battered about on the internet, but you've never been officially publicly identified. Do you want to tell us who you are?
My name is Michael Byrd. I'm a lieutenant for the United States Capitol Police.
For months, he has lived in hiding, he says, over this moment. His decision to use deadly force against a rioter as she climbed through a barricaded door that leads to the House chamber. In the months since, he's been the target of threats.
Can you give us the nature of some of those threats?
They talked about, killing me, cutting off my head, very vicious and cruel things.
Racist things?
There were some racist attacks as well. It's all disheartening because I know I was doing my job.
All right, so that's the voice of Lieutenant Michael Byrd, who was a Capitol policeman. And he's the one who did the shooting. All right, so here we go. Joseph, that's just the beginning of his interview with Lester, but we just have to tell people what we know about him. So I'm just going to turn you loose, please. There's a lot I could say, but you're the expert.
Yeah. Michael Byrd, we've learned a tremendous amount about him in the past 5 or 6 months due to the investigations that were being run by Representative Barry Loudermilk, Republican of Georgia. They did extensive investigating, and they released a 7-page report back in November with some absolutely shocking details about Lieutenant Byrd, who is now a captain. He was promoted and is now making roughly $190,000 a year.
And he got a big bonus, didn't he? Didn't he get a big bonus, well, Joe, for his courageousness?
And that's one of the things Loudermilk called out. He said Lieutenant Byrd was given special treatment compared to other Capitol officers, and that included a $36,000 unrestricted retention bonus when the average for other officers who served on January 6th was around $3,000. Wow. He was also given $21,000 to upgrade a security system in his Maryland home. And the Capitol Police helped him set up a GoFundMe account that eventually netted him more than $164,000. So there was that kind of help, and this letter from Loudermilk says Byrd was upset that this stuff wasn't happening fast enough. And so he got into some drawn-out back-and-forth with the general counsel for the Capitol Police. Then the Capitol Police also put him up at Joint Base Andrews in a military hotel, you know, on this high-security military base for roughly 7 months, which cost the taxpayers more than $35,000. And I know he mentioned in his clip about going into hiding, but he wasn't in hiding so much that he didn't want to go out to a local bar, and he had a detail of protective officers from Capitol Police that accompanied him, you know, four or five of them. So he had his own security detail, and if he felt like going out and socializing while he was in hiding, he had official protection from the Capitol Police. But those things, as shocking as they are, don't compare to the discipline incidents that Loudermilk released. Several of them, including one where he opened fire into a fleeing van that was driving away from his home that he had thought was trying to trespass on his property.
That's before he shot Ashley. This is an incident that happened.
Well, yeah. This is earlier in his career, and he has a track record. Since at least the year 2000, there have been numerous incidents where there were use of force investigations, including that one where he said he fired into the windshield of a van that was trying to run him down. But the evidence showed that the bullet was in the rear of the van. There were no bullets or damage to the windshield. So he was brought up on charges for the department and recommended for termination. But that was all overturned, and nothing happened in that case. So, and that was just one of several misconduct cases that are in his file at the Capitol Police.
So now I find it interesting that, and also he has a problem telling the truth. We have to say that, because this was interesting because Lester Holt actually, this goes by quickly, but Byrd claimed he heard that shots had been fired in the chamber. And I'll let's just listen. This is Lester Holt on NBC with Lieutenant Byrd at the time, clip 7.
Did you ever hear a call or a report of shots fired during any of this?
As a matter of fact, I did. There was reports of shots fired through the house main door onto the floor of the chamber.
Later, those reports would prove to be false.
Yeah, okay, I'm sorry. I'm laughing like I can't help sometimes when things are so horrible. So he claimed he heard there were shots fired. I guess that was his supposed excuse for using his gun. Is that what they tried to do, make that a reason?
Well, it's interesting that what he failed to mention, and none of the investigative reports on this shooting mentioned this either, that after shooting Ashley and she was down bleeding to death, instead of doing what you're trained to do as an officer, is to advance on the subject and make sure they're subdued. They probably would have put handcuffs on her even in that condition, but they didn't even remove her backpack. So he didn't advance. He actually backed up. He went on the Capitol Police radio and said, "We are under fire." He said that he was under fire, he had his gun drawn, and he was prepared to fire back. That they were taking
fire. This is after he shot her. After he shot her, right?
Yes, and then he followed it up saying, "I believe someone was shot." Well, he shot her, and this was after he shot her, probably 60 seconds or so after, and he made this false report that officers were under fire. It wasn't true, and it was never corrected. So we had SWAT officers from every federal agency streaming into the Capitol after this shooting, and because that wasn't corrected, you would think that they were probably thinking this was an active shooter situation. And the word did not go back out. Hey, it was officer involved, you know, the scene secure or something like that. It was just never corrected. And that's that kind of, I don't even know the word for it, you know, to fabricate something like that. But I do think it fits the pattern of everything we know about him.
Yeah, well, and also then you have the news reporting there's been a shooting. Well, people automatically think that it's these insurrectionists who are in the Capitol shooting, and it was just an abject lie. And then maybe not the last thing, but another thing is he made a different claim. This is clip 8 with Lester Holt and Lieutenant Byrd.
He says officers barricaded the door, what he considered the last line of defense.
I had been yelling and screaming as loud as I was, please stop, get back, stop. We had our weapons drawn.
There's a gun! There's a gun!
Byrd, only his hand and gun visible, targeted a figure trying to climb through a window. He fired a single, fatal shot, hitting Ashley Babbitt. She was 35 years old, an Air Force veteran, Trump supporter, and QAnon follower.
We see your arm out there for a considerable amount of time. Were you wavering?
I was taking a tactical stance. You're ultimately hoping that your commands will be complied with, and unfortunately, they were not.
Okay, Joseph, take it. Explain what the truth was true there.
Well, the truth is, he did waver. His finger came on and off the trigger several times as he was kind of creeping his way out of a hidden position. So Ashley Babbitt never saw him. She couldn't have from the even a peripheral vision when she was up in the window, could not have seen him. He was at such a low angle, and he crept out of that, and, you know, we slowed it down and watched the finger go on and off and on and off. And despite what he said, he wasn't in a tactical stance. Use of force experts have looked at this and said, this is not a standard position that you should take in a situation like this. That he had his right arm extended and what they call pushed the shot out. And you can see his gun dips and then it comes back up as he's firing. So it certainly appeared he was very unsure of himself, and considering how he retreated and then fabricated that story, one only wonders what was actually going through his head. But he hasn't spoken about that. But he said on NBC he could not tell if this was a man or a woman. He could not tell if they had something in this backpack. And he didn't find out it was a woman until later that night. So if there was nothing in her hands, and other officers backed that up, and they couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman, how can you open fire and use deadly force when you can't even see what the situation is? Yeah. There are many things he could have done but didn't do. This was the shot, the fatal shot, was the first line.
Well, he's also claimed he was shouting, warning, stop, stop, please stop. And I thought that had been refuted. Am I wrong? Did he really actually do that? Because he said he did.
It's impossible to know. There were other officers in the speaker's lobby that were behind some of the other pillars. Now, they at least one of them said that they did hear shouting to that, with that kind of a message, get back, get back, get back. You can't tell on the video because Byrd has a COVID mask right up to the bottom of his eyelids, all the way down under his chin, and you can't see what his face is doing. But what we do know is that that was not heard in the speaker's lobby. Nobody could hear. If he was screaming, it didn't register in there, and that actually has been tested with people who were along the same wall as Ashley, and there was nothing picked up. So even if he was screaming till his throat was bloody, as he claimed, it was just not heard. And even when Taylor Hansen started screaming, gun, gun, and he's got a gun, that also could not be heard even across the hallway where Ashley was, a fairly short distance. And he was, you played the clip, he was shouting loudly. So that just goes to show you that the decibel level in that hallway was absolutely insane. So, you know, she did not hear a command, and nor did anybody else in that hallway. And, you know, if you're going to advance and fire on someone, I would think you would want to know that they heard you, and, you know, and not just take the first shot that comes along. So that's his claim. You know, other officers that were behind him in the lobby gave conflicting accounts. The officers in the speaker's lobby, the three who were guarding the door, did not hear anything. They did not hear any commands or any feedback coming through the windows of the speaker's lobby.
So a couple of things. What happened to those policemen? At what point did they exit? Because I mean, the video I've seen is that they just walk away. But you say that was after the shooting? I'm confused about that.
No, that was shortly before the shooting. If you watch the video, you'll hear John Sullivan, Jaden X was his handle. He was also filming that day, but you can hear him start to lobby for them to get out of there and tell them, you know, you guys, you know, we don't want you to get hurt. You really should go. Get out of here. And if you know, I don't know if Sullivan's words were the thing that convinced them, but the sergeant pulled them, and they walked away from the door, and as soon as they were gone, you can hear John Sullivan say, "Go get this bleep," and several of the people that we can call rioters, because they did riot, started attacking the door with flagpoles and karate kicks and all sorts of stuff, and those officers went and stood right near Ashley along the other wall.
Okay.
And then they were going to go down the stairs, and that's what they were doing when the shot was fired.
Okay, so Lieutenant Byrd then, as I recall, refused to write a report or even respond to questions. Can you fill the blanks in on that a little bit after this incident?
He did not write a use of force report. He did not write anything. He claims to have written some notes on an evidence bag at the request of another officer at some point after the shooting, but there's no evidence of that. Nobody ever found an evidence bag that he wrote on. So he did meet with the Metropolitan Police Department Internal Affairs. They were doing the investigation of the, you know, involving use of force with Capitol Police. They have an arrangement with them. And he sat down and said, "I don't want to do this without having legal counsel present." Now, they could have compelled him to speak. There's laws and regulations that would have compelled him to speak, but he said, I don't want to do this, and they didn't push back. And he never did. They never made him come back in. He did not sit down for a formal interview with Internal Affairs and has yet to be exposed to what you would say is adversarial questioning, you know, the kind that you would typically get from a detective who is investigating a crime. Mm-hmm. So the only thing we know about Byrd's state of mind was what he told Lester Holt.
Yeah. Well, so meanwhile, Ashley's lying on the ground dying, and there were people attending to her, trying to save her life. There was a doctor trying to save her life, and at some point, Joseph, he gets, like, pulled away by this big, burly, it looks like a Capitol policeman, someone with some authority, and makes him leave. What was that all about?
Yeah, Dr. Austin Harris from Los Angeles area was in the hallway, and as soon as the shooting happened, he stepped forward. He's a physician, I believe he's an anesthesiologist, but he's worked in trauma medicine, and he stepped forth. His backpack was huge. It was a medical backpack, a medical kit, and he knelt down and started to assess her condition. And he was right next to a young man, Young Kim, who's a riot videographer, also trained, I guess they call it riot medicine, but he had a medical kit as well. And they had supplies like a seal for a bullet wound. And so they were trying to locate her wound, and the doctor when he was just about to start CPR on her, he was grabbed by a Capitol Police bicycle officer, grabbed and pulled away so quickly that he didn't have a chance to grab his medical bag. And he protested, of course, and I don't know exactly what he said. I'm still hoping to interview him at some point. But the officer really bull-rushed him down the hallway. It looked like a football practice.
Yeah, yeah.
And they almost came to blows, and the doctor then asked for his med kit back. But the most qualified person on that floor in that hallway was an MD, and they tore him away, and then they tore young Kim, who also was trying to do that. They made him leave, so they grabbed him and ejected him from the hallway. So, you know, your Lord only knows what might have happened if the doctor had been allowed to continue.
And then they carry Ashley down the stairs head first, you know, which is, that's where the wound is. It's in her head. And so, anyway, it's a very difficult story to tell, Joseph, and I'm sure it's been hard for you to cover it, but I'm so grateful you have. Is there anything more about that before we go to this lawsuit? Anything else you want to add about what happened with Ashley?
No, although maybe it is part of a lawsuit discussion. We could talk about the current and outgoing Capitol Police Chief who wrote a two-page memo last week, or on May 2nd, distributed to the entire department, in which he attacked Ashley Babbitt and complained bitterly about the coming settlement of the civil suit. And so I wrote an extensive article on that because his letter contains falsehoods. And, you know, he was singing from the Department of Justice choir book when they declined to prosecute Burt. So that happened, and I think that was a cheap shot. It's a civil lawsuit. I don't know why the Capitol Police Chief felt the need to comment on a civil suit, because he was not being sued, nor was the department being sued, nor was Byrd being sued. Aaron Babbitt and Ashley's estate sued the federal government. So it's unfortunate, but this kind of hostility that against Ashley, it continues, even from public officials who ascribe motives to her that are not true, call her a rioter when she actually tried to stop and did stop the riot. She never did anything that would qualify as rioting. So, you know, that even their definition of her as a rioter doesn't meet the show me where she rioted. You can't say everybody, 250,000 people surrounding the Capitol, they all rioted. And that's what we're told. But you judge people on their behavior. And there were rioters in the hallway, but she was not one of them.
Well, you're talking about U.S. Capitol Police Chief J. Thomas Manger. It's interesting that these people are still in place. You know, we kind of have the impression right now that everything's been cleaned up and all of this has stopped. But it has not stopped. And you mentioned earlier, did you not, that video has caught U.S. Capitol Police Officer Thomas Manger walking and talking with Zachary Jordan Alam, the guy that we think might be Antifa who was breaking out the window that Ashley tried to stop? Is that who was walking with her, him?
No. He wasn't with the department on January 6th. He didn't come till 6 months after the shooting.
Okay.
That was an officer of the Sergeant at Arms.
Okay.
That provides security in the House chamber. His name was Jason Gandolf. Got a big black bushy beard, but was also wearing a COVID mask and was plainclothes. And he ended up standing directly next to and behind Ashley during part of this melee in the hallway. But they did pass him on their way in, and he wasn't going down that hall, but they said, you know, hey, stay safe. And he ended up being a key witness.
You know, I think also it bears repeating that Nancy Pelosi was Speaker of the House when all this took place. And these guys, the Capitol Police, work for the Speaker of the House. Speaker of the House is responsible for the safety, you know, has a ton of authority. She's the one that set up the metal detectors for fellow congressmen, making their lives miserable, forcing mask mandates and all of that. So these guys directly work for her, and I'm sure that's a whole other story for another day. But okay, so Joseph, Judicial Watch.
There is one thing I should mention on that she did have a meeting that involved different officials, different law enforcement officials, in which she told them that Michael Byrd was off limits, and she also told them and her staff to take care of him financially. So they did work with Capitol Police officials on all of these things we mentioned before, the $36,000. There was discussion at one point of using the Officers' Memorial Fund, which is supposed to be for fallen and killed officers, or killed in the line of duty, $400,000 from that fund to pay to Michael Byrd. The word got out on that, and the police union, you know, raised a big stink about it, and then that idea kind of evaporated. But Pelosi's office was deeply involved in negotiating, trying to find ways to help Byrd.
Boy, I did not know that. I did not know that. What a damning story in every way. Well, thank goodness for Judicial Watch, our friends in Judicial Watch, Tom Fitton and his gang, who, on behalf of Aaron Babbitt, filed a lawsuit, as you have alluded, against the federal government. So we've talked about a lot of the details, Joseph. So what was the case they brought against the government? What were the charges?
Well, the lawsuit that was filed in January 2024, it went on for, I think it was 30 pages.
Oh, okay.
But they talked about negligence, that Byrd's negligence in the shooting, negligence in training, and it showed how he, at least these are their allegations, but showed how he violated his own department's training policies in the way he acted that day. And it kind of dissected his behavior and also talked about him making a false radio broadcast, but that, you know, he did pretty much nothing right that day. And, you know, the lawsuit tried to attach an amount to that. It was filed for $30 million. And it has been a battle ever since about where this lawsuit was going to end up, in which court, in which city.
Yeah, I think the Judicial Watch wanted it. Her, you know, she's from San Diego, and they wanted it to be out there. And then I guess the government moved it to D.C., which is that unfriendly atmosphere, obviously, unfair to almost everybody. And so that makes it really curious to me, Joseph, that how they won even at sort of a in principle reaching this judgment with a D.C. judge. How did that happen?
Well, the judge doesn't have anything to do with the settlement, believe it or not. The settlement was made with the Trump DOJ, so the change in administration and the change in senior leadership at the Department of Justice. And I'm sure that there was Trump involvement to the degree of, you know, putting his finger on the scale, saying, I want this thing settled. You know, and he's spoken about Ashley many times. And the most recent thing he said is he was going to look into her shooting. And so I think the White House leaned on the DOJ to get a settlement done. I don't know if they approached first or if Aaron asked for settlement talks, but, you know, the Biden DOJ would have played this out as through the trial, and they were not about to settle anything. So that's how the discussions began, and they announced last week that there was a settlement in principle, but they have not come up with the final document and have not signed anything.
So U.S. District Judge Ana Reyes was the judge, at least in the case, the hearing last week, I believe, you wrote about this. And we don't have to go into all the details, although I'd love to do that on maybe a different day. But you note that there was a lot of contention in that courtroom. She wasn't exactly excited about doing this, was she?
No, from The second she was assigned this case, it was originally assigned to Judge Gia Cobb in D.C., but then it was transferred to a fairly new district judge, Anna Reyes, who was appointed by Joe Biden. This was the second, last week there was a hearing, and they did have a dial-in audio line, which they used to only do that during COVID to allow media and others to dial in and listen. And I think this hearing was a good example of why the judiciary doesn't want their hearings televised, because she completely lost her composure. She lost her temper with Robert Stigt of Judicial Watch, and she shouted at him, you know, be quiet. She called him Mr. Stitch. Mr. Stitch, be quiet. Stop talking. Stop talking. And at one point, it was a shout, but it bordered on a scream, that she just was that angry, and she said, you're not going to make snide remarks to me about this, and blah, blah, you know, and just completely lost her cool. And she is the judge that was overseeing the suit, so they still have to go back in and have hearings before her until there's a document signed. But this was the second hearing where she really went after Judicial Watch, and again, she lost her temper back in October and just seems so very angry. But honestly, it's the first time I've ever heard a judge in a hearing practically start screaming. And you look at that and you think, boy, if they had gone to trial, you imagine that would have been difficult.
So, Joseph, this I am confused a little bit, and I don't have to understand everything about this, but I know there's a dispute with a prior attorney for Ashley, who I think kind of filed his claim last Friday morning, and that's part of the argument. Does he deserve part of the suit? He didn't bring the suit. And so there's going to be a dispute about that. But will this judge really, will she be the arbitrator of that? Will she be the decision maker?
Well, what Judicial Watch has proposed is moving this before an arbitration, a fee arbitration board, before the D.C. Bar Association. They have a group that is set up specifically for disputes over attorney fees. So that's what he has proposed. I think Mr. Terry Roberts would like the judge to decide it. He has asked for a 25% lien on whatever the settlement amount is. But, you know, he quit the case. You know, Aaron didn't fire him from the case. He decided to disengage from Aaron in February, I believe, 2022. And I distinctly remember that time because we were making lots of discoveries, including discovering how she punched Zachary in the face. And we had made a series of graphics that shows in succession the punch and the glasses coming off. And he told Erin Babbitt that doesn't show a punch. She didn't punch anybody. She didn't, and he argued with him. And if you watch the video, unless your eyes are closed, I don't see how you could possibly argue that. So it certainly appeared they weren't on the same page. And then apparently he withdrew from the case. And then Erin, after some long deliberations, contacted Judicial Watch and worked out for them to represent him.
Wow, isn't that something? Well, I have to note that just because people are listening who don't know all of these things that you and I have been following, that a lot of these attorneys that represented the J6ers were not on the J6ers side, and they did terrible representation, almost no representation, sometimes refusing to show video that would have help their case or exonerated them either. And so don't be surprised that an attorney for Ashley would not really be there to help her, because it was kind of a pattern. But all right, so last question, Joseph, and I appreciate so much of your time today. What would this mean, this settlement, to the whole narrative? This finding, I guess, that I don't know, would the result of it, it would be a settlement for her, but would it definitively put blame on Lieutenant Byrd or Captain Byrd, whatever his title is now? Would it put blame on him, and would there be repercussions, you think?
Well, clearly, settling a case, even if they even if the federal government puts out a statement saying it's not an admission of guilt, it is an admission of guilt, especially, you know, when we see the amount. I do not know what the settlement amount is. I've seen media reporting it at $30 million, but that's what that was the top amount that the suit demanded. I'd be surprised if that was the settlement. But so it will be an admission that Byrd was negligent, and that he, you know, I don't know that, you know, we'll see how Judicial Watch frames it, you know, because I think they've said all along this was a murder, plain and simple. The medical examiner ruled this a homicide, but wow. MPD and the Department of Justice did not agree with that. They, you know, found that he, you know, wasn't someone that should be brought up on charges because of that.
Well, Joseph, the implications just from that right there are huge. So we'll be standing by, of course, to find out what happens. There needs to be some justice. There needs to be more justice for the J6ers. And if we had more time, we'd talk more about what's going on with them. But I've taken plenty of your time today, and I know you got it. What are you working on right now? Can you tell us?
Well, I've got an investigative story coming out probably this week about a gentleman that I've written about before at Epoch Times, that he was injured by being shot with a crowd control munition at point blank range. And we've now identified the officer that shot him. And so we're going to show that and show how these weapons were used very dangerously on January 6th and wounded probably an unknown number of people, because people didn't tend to come forward and admit to being there, because DOJ would have certainly charged them if they admitted that they were there. So I've got that report coming out this week. There is a hearing in the Babbitt lawsuit this afternoon that's going to deal with the former attorney. I'm not sure if there will be an update given at the hearing. If a deal was signed on that, I don't know. Anything is possible, so I'm going to listen in on that.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, Joseph Hanneman, again, with the investigative reporter for The Blaze. And by the way, The Blaze is doing great reporting. There's a tiny little charge to be part of their network and to receive the articles, and it's well worth it. I can't say that for every outlet, but The Blaze consistently delivers really good information. And you can see a reporter like Joseph, he's a serious reporter. And so you're getting serious content. So I highly recommend that you sign up to receive these articles. And Joseph, we just appreciate your faithful coverage and honest coverage of January 6th. I just want to thank you for that. So thank you. And thank you for your time today.
You bet. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. Talk to you soon. All right. Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7. Hi, this is Sandy Rios. A lot of Christians would be shocked to learn they are personally profiting from abortion and pornography. It's unnerving to realize just how many companies and corporations are actively involved in unbiblical practices. To help cut through the red tape, there is a great option known as Timothy Plan. Timothy Plan is the pioneer in biblically responsible investing. Timothy Plan carefully filters out companies involved in practices Scripture tells us to avoid. We are in an all-out culture war. One powerful way to make a difference is to put our money where our values are. Please go to timothyplan.com/sandy. That's timothyplan.com/sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-846-7526. Discover how to be a biblically responsible investor.
Before investing, carefully consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company. This and other important information can be found in the fund's prospectus. To obtain a copy, visit timothyplan.com or call 800-846-7526. Read each prospectus carefully before investing.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
I was 25 years old, and I had known about my pregnancy for over a month. My cramps didn't start until I took the second set of pills. It was my first time being pregnant, but I knew I was having contractions. I lay down in bed as soon as I felt the first one coming on. I was wearing nothing but a big t-shirt and a diaper pad. Intense pain, then it would go away, then more pain. Each wave of cramping a little worse than the one before. I hurt so bad I had to hold myself all balled up, and I just yelled at my boyfriend, "Turn on the bath, I need to get in there." I felt a flood of liquid in my underwear, and I stepped in the bath with my clothes still on. Lying back in the tub, I felt some pressure release. Then I screamed. The fetus was... it was floating in the water. It was slightly smaller than the palm of my hand. And the fetus had a head, hands and legs, defined fingers and toes. I leapt from the bath and collapsed in my boyfriend's arms. I learned later that my fetus matched descriptions of those roughly 13 weeks along.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. And would you like to stop that? That's the French abortion pill, and that's what women are going through. It could be your daughter, could be your granddaughter. This is what's happening. They are giving them the pill through the mail without seeing a doctor. They have no idea how far along they are. Women are going through such trauma, such trauma. They're being lied to, used for money. The abortion industry, once again, is prevailing to use these women just to as a piggy bank. The abuse of women is just beyond comprehension. And so if you would like to stop it, Preborn is on the front line of trying to do that, trying to stop this pill from being available, trying to stop after the woman's taking the first pill, try to give them progesterone so that the baby can live, trying to stop them before they take that second pill, which actually expels it, and it's too late. So if you'd like to help, will you help? Preborn is... you just contact them at preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your most generous donation.
The Sandy Rios 24/7 podcast are available at AFR.net. Back to Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Yes, one, a thing that a lot of people actually aren't very aware of is that the cops just created this mess. And I come from a family of law enforcement, so it's very weird for even me to say that. But I have covered riots across the country. I've been in Portland, I've been in D.C., everywhere you can imagine. And I've never seen police brutality like I saw that day. Is they threw the first grenade, that's really what, you know, created the stir in the crowd. And then people started pushing back. And then they just kept throwing grenades deep into the back of the crowd, pushing people towards them. So then it really made this, you know, it was like almost perfect for this perfectly crafted narrative. And you had videographers with these big news sources that were very conveniently placed, almost as if they were ready and they knew what was going to happen. So really, it just stinks of one big setup. And as I've said since day one, is you don't walk into one of the most secure buildings in the country with a sitting vice president inside, members of the House, members of the Senate, unarmed. And unless you're allowed to. And that's exactly what happened, is these officers opened the doors and let people in that day.
Well, that's the voice of Taylor Hansen. Taylor, I think he described there, he covered a lot of the riots leading up to the election. And so he actually was walking with Ashley Babbitt behind her as she entered the hallway outside the speaker's lounge. He saw everything. And he saw everything. We played some of his videos yesterday in part one. So again, I suggest that you go back and listen to that. But isn't it interesting to hear his perspective even then? This was an interview that he did with Good Morning San Diego. And that was, I don't know what the year was, but it was at least a year or maybe even two after the thing happened. And he was already saying that. So it's just fascinating stuff. And there will be more to come because Joseph is doing tons of investigating on follow-up on like the firebombs being sent into the crowd. Taylor just alluded to that. There's more news about that. The way the police incited the riot is just amazing. So there'll be more information forthcoming. And of course, we'll be watching to see what happens with the lawsuit Judicial Watch has filed against the Justice Department. I guess they've already agreed. We just don't know the amount of the settlement. And actually, the hearing's not going to take place until June of 2026. So it's interesting. Don't ask me to explain it, because I can't. But this is more of I Hope Truth, just a big dose of truth for you today. That's what we try to do every day on Sandy Rios 24/7. I want to thank our sponsors, because we could not do this without them. Timothy Plan lets you put your money where your values are and discover how to be a biblically responsible investor. Visit timothyplan.com/Sandy. That's timothyplan.com/Sandy. Or call 1-800-TIM-PLAN. That's 1-800-TIM-PLAN. Well, thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.